Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC 217 event, which takes place in New York, New York. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we won 2.95 units for UFC Fight Night 119 last week after going 2-0 on our premium bets. We also lost our one-unit free bet. Back to the present, UFC 216 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass, Fox Sports 1, and pay-per-view this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking off the fight card on Fight Pass is a bantamweight contest between Ayman Zahabi, and who is 7-0, and Ricardo Ramos, who is 10-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I'm up in Ramos, minus 130, the comeback on Zahabi at minus 110. Looking over our sponsored sportsbook, 5dimes.eu, it's currently Ramos minus 185, Zahabi's at plus 160. So recent action actually coming in Ramos's way. Early on, it was staying kind of steady, two-way action, but now again, we're seeing a little bit more action come in Ramos's way. I kind of agree with the early action coming in towards the favorite a little bit. I mean, this is going to be a competitive matchup. That's why I set the line as I did, and it's still a competitive line. Anything under 2-1 to me is ultra-competitive. So I think we're going to see some fireworks here back and forth because what you have here are two prospects, legit prospects. I know Zahabi at age 29. I mean, when you start talking about guys that are almost 30, a lot of people don't like it to consider them prospects. But I'm talking about in UFC, in MMA years, I mean, he's still relatively young in his career. He's 7-0, undefeated. And obviously, he's training at a good camp with his brother and all the crew, GSP, a TriStar. So he is legitimately a guy you can consider a prospect, I think, still. He's borderline. And, of course, Ramos, on the other hand, he's only 22 years old, and he is a legit prospect. I mean, the guy's young. He's going to keep developing his skill set. And what a skill set it is, really. I mean, the guy's a very complete fighter already. So, again, I think this fight's going to deliver some fireworks. Getting into their backgrounds a little bit, Ramos is actually a BJJ black belt. He's known for his ground game, but he's also a threat standing as well. I mean, he's technical. He's got some skill on the feet. He's got power to go along with it. And, of course, like I mentioned, he's kind of slick on the ground when he gets you down on the floor as well. He's got a decent clinch game and a knee attack as well. His takedown and wrestling can improve a little bit. I mean, it is improving fight by fight. He still needs to work on those areas a little bit more, but I think that you can noticeably tell he is drilling and he is getting better in those areas for sure. Now, Zahabi, on the other hand, I mean, he's looking pretty good as well. He made a successful UFC debut. He looked okay in that fight. I mean, he was facing a very decent opponent. I think it was a perfect opponent for him and Vieira to make your UFC debut against because Vieira is tough enough and he's well-rounded enough that if you beat him, you're basically on the right track in the bantamweight division. And Zahabi did impress in that fight. I mean, he got challenged at times. He got put on his back slightly in that fight a little bit, but he managed to get out and then display what he does best, and that's a striking skill. So Zahabi, in my opinion, has a little bit more pure knockout power than Ramos here. So he's going to want to keep this fight standing. And he's got decent takedown defense. Ramos, on the other hand, I mean, he's not going to be out of his element standing either. I mean, he likes to stand and bang, and I think he will have success even on the feet with Zahabi, but he's going to want to take this fight to the ground. And on the floor is where the discrepancy is going to be, in my opinion, here. I got to side with Ramos. I think Ramos is just a little bit better. Obviously, I mean, he's a jiu-jitsu practitioner, so he's going to be smoother and a little bit more slick on the ground. I think he's just going to be a level above Zahabi, and he catches Zahabi's back. I think he can finish it, honestly. So that's where the difference maker is here for me, and that's why I agree with the early action coming in Ramos's way as well. I do believe he's just a little bit more complete of a fighter right now, and I think he probably gets the job done and maybe possibly by submission along the way. So the pick is Ramos to defeat Zahabi in what should be a fairly entertaining matchup.
Zahabi couldn't come from a better training environment. I mean, he trains at TriStar. His brother's the coach. He's working with GSP during GSP's comeback. I'm literally picture perfect, ideal training environment to get your second UFC appearance. The problem is he's facing a big step up in competition. I mean, Ricardo Ramos is, in my opinion, one of the better fighters to come out of Dana White's Looking for a Fight. And I mean, this guy is extremely well-rounded. He's good on the feet. He's better on the ground. And if he can get you on the floor, he is going to have a very good chance of finishing you. I mean, his submission game is spectacular. So, Sahabi's going to have his hands full if he cannot stop takedowns. Granted, he stopped most of the takedowns in his UFC debut, but he did get put on his back, as Nick mentioned, against somebody who, in my opinion, has a worse ground game and worse wrestling ability than Ramos. On the feet, Sahabi is definitely dangerous. I mean, he's got that great background. He can punch, he can kick. I mean, you name it. I do think that he is the better striker than Ramos. It's just, will he be able to keep the fight standing for the whole time? If he does, he's got a good chance of pulling this one out. But if he does not, if he gets put on his back, I think Ramos has a good shot of not just keeping him on his back, but potentially finishing him there. So I'm siding with Ramos, but if he does not get the fight to the floor, the momentum will probably shift more towards the hobby. So I am picking, though, officially Ricardo Ramos. Now moving up to the light heavyweight division, we have a UFC newcomer in Michael Oleksychyk, who is 12-2, and Ian Kutalaba, who is 13-3 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I have in Kutalaba -300, the comeback on Oleksychyk at +220. This line has skyrocketed a little bit. Right now it's Kutalaba -550. The comeback on Oleksychyk is at +425. And again, that's at fivedimes.eu. I'm not really that surprised, I guess. Kutalaba is definitely the better fighter here, in my opinion. I opened him a solid favorite, but again, no hesitation from the early bettors to come in and lay that chalk. And then also people are throwing him in parlays because I do think that this is stylistically a tough matchup for Oleksychyk. I mean, getting into Oleksychyk first here, I mean, he's a striking-based fighter. He's got decent boxing, has a little power in both hands, but he does prefer to fight southpaw, which is a little bit, I guess, unorthodox for most fighters, but Kutalaba himself is a southpaw. So you have southpaw versus southpaw here, which makes things a little bit interesting. Oleksychyk also has some kicks to his game, successful at applying those kicks throughout with his boxing, mixing that in as well. The ground is a little bit of a question mark for me. I mean, from top, he's not too bad. But his takedown defense and from his back is a little bit iffy. I mean, I've seen him, you know, there's footage out there of him actually getting his back taken and getting pounded on the floor as well. So I think Kutalaba is the type of fighter that he's more well known for his striking ability as well. But he does show potential in the wrestling department, and his takedown defense and his wrestling has really improved. And I think he's going to be able to kind of implement that game plan in this fight as well. Now, as far as Oleksychyk goes, there is another concern that I do have. I mean, it's a strike defense. For being more known for a striker and having a little bit of power and typically getting the job done that way, I mean, if you watch him on tape, he shies away from some striking. I mean, he kind of turns his head, backs away a little bit. He's very hittable. And his reaction, I don't know. I just don't like it. So Kutalaba has enough power, and he's going to put the pressure on here that Oleksychyk, I think, is going to be backing up, kind of turning that head along the way, getting clipped with some punches. Kutalaba is going to follow it up maybe with a quick takedown. And then once he gets top position or dominant position on the ground, the night could be over that quick. So to me, I think I like Oleksychyk. I think he has some potential, and I'm glad the UFC brought him, you know, upon this roster. But at the same time, I think this matchup, I mean, making his UFC debut against Kutalaba is just stylistically, it's a bad matchup for him. So I do think Oleksychyk is going to win some fights in the UFC. I just don't think it's going to be this one. So my pick is Kutalaba to win and probably inside the distance.
Oleksychyk is a fun fighter to watch. He's got some power. He's got finishing ability. But man, that defense. Ian Kutalaba is not a guy that you can just ignore defensively. Kutalaba hits hard, he throws extremely often, and he's very active. And, I mean, if Oleksychyk blocks punches with his face against Kutalaba like he has against several other opponents, it's going to be a very short UFC debut for him. I mean, Oleksychyk, again, he's talented, but there is a major gap in terms of pure overall ability in MMA, because defense is very important in this sport if you want to have a long career. And Kutalaba, his offense is typically his best defense, but I mean, even he knows how to get out of the way of a good punch every once in a while. But Oleg Stachik is just way too willing to eat a shot to dish one out. And I think it's going to hurt. And that's all I really have to say about this. I don't think it goes to the ground unless Kutalaba takes it there. And I don't see the reason why he would want to, because he should be able to just do a lot of damage on the feet. So my pick's going to be Ian Kutalaba. I think he wins by knockout in the first round. Now this brings us to the main event of the Fight Pass prelims. In the heavyweight division, we have Alexei Oleinik, who is 52-10-1, taking on Curtis Blaydes, who is 7-1 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Blaydes -230, the comeback on Oleinik at +170. Right now, it's -400 for Blaydes over five times. Oleinik is +325. So no respect for the old man in Oleinik. I mean, he's age 40 right now. I get it. I understand it. Blaydes is supposed to be the guy that's going to be climbing that UFC heavyweight ladder. But I'm not so sure. I mean, this is not going to be an easy fight. I think people are disrespecting Oleinik a little bit too much. Am I going to pick Oleinik to win? No, I think Blaydes should win this fight. I mean, matchup-wise, it probably is a good matchup for Blaydes because he's got good takedown defense. He's got that wrestling background, and he's got enough striking here that if he's careful and he's smart about things, he could probably have a little bit of success against Oleinik. But Oleinik, man, we all know he's been around the sport for a long time. He's just now finally making and settling into his UFC career, making a pretty decent run. I mean, in my opinion, I thought he'd maybe win a fight or two or have a couple fights in the UFC to get beat and get put out. So he's proved me wrong. I mean, the guy has definitely found the fountain of youth at age 40, and there's no question about his skill set. The guy is a dangerous fighter, especially on the ground. That's where he gets most of his wins with his unorthodox submission techniques. I mean, the guy is a technical – I mean, slip grappler. I mean, there's no doubt about it. The guy, has some very unorthodox chokes, as we all know, and he's dangerous. Even on the feet now, man, he's got that old man strength that if he lands a big punch on you, you can be lights out. So Oleinik is one of those guys that's tough as nails as well. He's hard to get rid of, and he's going to be keep fighting really till the end. So this is definitely a tougher matchup, I think, than most people realize here. But again, it's hard to pick against Blaydes. I mean, he's only 26 years old. He's going to be improving fight by fight. I was a little bit disappointed in Blaydes' last performance against Omelinchuk. I thought he could do a little bit better. That fight was a lot more competitive than most of us thought. So that worries me a little bit, especially if you guys are out there laying 3-1, 4-1 on Blaydes. I don't think he's as far in his career as we all think, like as far as development goes. I think he has still a long way to go as far as rounding his game out a little bit more, having a little bit more confidence in him, especially on the feet. But overall, still hard to pick against him here. I mean, the youth factor, just the stylistic matchup here for Blaydes. I think he does get the job done here against Oleinik and probably a stoppage along the way. I think he probably ends up knocking Oleinik out, but we'll see how it goes. Oleinik, again, tough as nails, so wouldn't be shocking, I guess, either if it does hit the scorecards. But my pick is going to be Blaydes, like most of you out there. I think he does get the old man out of there. But much respect to Oleinik, man. I mean, his run has been very respectful.
And I tentatively agree, but Alexei Oleinik has been full of surprises. I mean, his last fight, he didn't just beat Travis Brown. He finished him. That's crazy. I mean, Travis Brown is a guy that at least a few years ago was a top contender in the heavyweight division after he knocked out Overeem. So, I mean, this is a guy in Oleinik that is capable of, when he fights at his peak performance, he can finish just about anybody except maybe the top of the top in the heavyweight division. I mean, that being said, I mean, he still is in his 40s. He's had over 60 MMA fights. I mean, I once saw Neil Grove tear through Oleinik like a hot knife through butter in a Bellator heavyweight tournament. So, I mean, there is a ceiling for Alexei Oleinik, and that is when somebody really puts the pressure on him and just goes to take him out on the feet. He's vulnerable there, but he's also dangerous. I mean, he landed a good shot against Jared Rosholt on the feet and hurt him pretty badly. This guy, as Nick mentioned, does have that kind of old man strength. He's capable of pulling some things off. And then on the ground, obviously, he has one of the better submission games in the heavyweight division. I mean, he's the only heavyweight that I know of that can pull off an Ezekiel choke. He has the only Ezekiel choke in UFC history finish, which was extremely impressive. So,
Major props to Alexei Oleinik for putting himself in this position and being a currently ranked top 10 heavyweight in the UFC at over 40 years old. So, and Curtis Blaydes, I understand the hype because he's a good athlete. He's young. He's strong. But he didn't just look disappointing in his last fight against Omelianchuk. That fight was atrocious. He fought awful. This is a guy that's supposed to be one of the better wrestlers in the heavyweight division, and he couldn't even take Daniel Omelianchuk down. Olenek took him down repeatedly. So, I mean, what does that say? I mean, Blaydes just had no drive in his or finish in his takedowns. He just kind of went in, pushed, and then gave up. That's not how you get takedowns in MMA. So that was a huge, huge red flag for me, and the fact that he's just not that good of a striker yet. So there's definitely the possibility that Alexei Oleinik could be a live dog here. I mean, I think the line has been bet completely out of control. And, I mean, if there's any value whatsoever, it's on Oleinik. But that being said, Blaydes is still 26 years old. He's training in Colorado and Chicago, and he's constantly adding things to his game. With Oleinik, you get what you see. He's not adding anything new. He's going to go for Ezekiel chokes if he's on the ground. Maybe he'll go for like a neck crank or a Kimura or something. And then on the feet, he potentially will try to knock you out, but he's not very fast. He's not very limber, and he doesn't have a very good chin. So if Curtis Blaydes is continuing to improve, then he's got a good shot of knocking him out on the feet or taking him down, getting top position, not doing anything stupid with it, and trying to knock him out with ground and pound. So I'm leaning Curtis Blaydes, but I think this fight's a lot closer than the betting odds indicate. But my final pick will be Curtis Blaydes. Now, moving on to the Fox Sports 1 preliminary card, we have a welterweight contest between Randy Brown, who is 9-2, and Mickey Gall, who is 4-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Brown, minus 150, the comeback on Gall at plus 110. Right now, looking over five dimes, it's actually Gall minus 120, the comeback on Brown, even money. So line has flipped, more action coming in Gall's way. This was tough to set a line on these guys as well, because talk about prospects. I mean, you have two guys that are prospects in the welterweight division here, fairly young. I mean, Gall's 25, Brown's 27. Brown kind of obviously had a little bit longer UFC career so far. Both these guys, but are serious prospects. I mean, Brown was Dana White's looking for a fighter show or whatever. So, you know, he's got some buzz around him from that. And Gall, I believe, is actually another one of those guys that came from that show as well, that kind of had a call out there, got Sage Northcutt, and was successful after he got CM Punk. So he's beaten a couple of popular fighters already in the UFC from the roster. But I think here it's a different matchup. I mean, finally, in my opinion, Gall is going to be facing a guy that is legitimately a threat. And again, I'm not taking it away from Sage Northcutt. I know he's a popular fighter. He's got some skill as well. But to me, I trust Brown a little bit better, meaning that I think he's just more of a put-together fighter here. I mean, Brown has some striking ability. He's got some length to go along with it. His takedown defense and his ground game is okay, but that is still where his disadvantage lies against Gall. In my opinion here, if Brown's takedown defense holds up, he's going to destroy Gall on the feet. I mean, we've seen Gall have some success. He has a little bit of knockout power. I mean, he doesn't have any true knockouts, but he's able to usually, you know, land a punch or two along the way and possibly damage their opponent, rock their opponent enough for him to get the fight to the ground or whatnot. And then once he's on the ground, Gall is very smooth. I mean, he gets your back. He sinks in the choke. I mean, that's where he's at his best, really. I mean, Gall is a ground technician. So it's your typical throwback fight. Gall either is probably going to win this fight by sub, or Brown is going to probably win this fight, in my opinion, by knockout. I mean, I don't think there's another way around it. If it goes to the scorecards, I mean, I kind of favor Brown a little bit as well. If Gall can lay on top of him for three rounds, that's one thing, but I don't think you'll be able to do that all three rounds. So I do think that Brown just kind of outworks Gall and just is the better and more complete fighter at this point of their career. So Gall has a little bit more room to improve. I think he might have a little bit more upside, but right now where they're at, I think the bigger discrepancy is actually Gall's stand-up game. I think Brown is going to have his way with him. And again, I think Brown's takedown defense is good enough that it probably stays upright long enough for him to do some damage and get the job done. So this is definitely an interesting fight. I'm not going to agree with the action coming in Gall's way right now. But if he does win by submission, I understand it, and I wouldn't be shocked either. So and that's the way to bet this fight. If you're going to bet Gall, I wouldn't necessarily take him straight out, especially right now at minus 120. Those of you guys that are on the fence and wanting to bet Gall, and you're betting him because of a submission game. So Five Dimes is going to have a pretty good number by Gall. With Gall by submission, that's how you do it. I don't think he wins any other way, honestly. I don't even think he wins on a scorecard. So my pick is going to be Brown. I think Brown probably gets it done. And if he does get it done, again, if you're going to bet Brown out there, maybe look at the Brown by knockout or TKO prop his way as well. So that's the way I think this fight plays out. But the actual pick is going to be Brown to win. I'm sorry, Gall, but I think your run comes to an end here.
Randy Brown is just a more complete fighter than Mickey Gall. Mickey Gall was a 1-0 fighter that won his UFC debut or that won his MMA debut and got a shot in the UFC to take on CM Punk. Yeah, Gall has performed above expectations and actually picked up a quality win over Sage Northcutt since then. But I mean, even in that fight, I mean, he was losing the stand up and then he just landed, in my opinion, almost like a lucky punch and then hurt Sage and that set up the finish. And against Randy Brown, there's just no way I see him landing a lucky punch. He needs a takedown. And the takedown is not going to be nearly as easy as it was when he took down CM Punk. Now, Randy Brown isn't the best with takedown defense. He's decent. I mean, he defends about 77%, and he's faced some pretty good wrestlers in his UFC run so far. But Mickey Gall, I don't think, has elite wrestling. He has very good grappling, but he doesn't have great wrestling. And on the feet, Randy Brown has, you know, Neil Magny-esque reach. I mean, this guy is one of the longest fighters in a weight class by comparison of any weight class. I mean, 78-inch reach as a welterweight. I mean, Randy Brown has scary length, and he's definitely learning how to use it. This guy has good power, good striking technique. He's a very exciting prospect, and he's committed to constantly improving. Mickey Gall, on the other hand, I just think he has a lot more holes in his game. Now, again, if he gets this fight to the floor, he's going to be in a decent position. Brown, for the most part, when he's had issues in the UFC, it's been against wrestlers or people that can exploit him on the ground, because Brown's a little too comfortable when he is taken down. He's a little too comfortable off of his back, and he can be controlled. So I'm a little concerned about that, but if he keeps it standing, I think, like Nick said, he lights him up. Brown is has good power, good length, and decent use of distance. So I think this is a great opportunity for Brown to not just win, but win impressively. So I think this is Randy Brown all the way, and he's my pick. Now moving up to the light heavyweight division, we have Ovin St. Preux, who is 21-10, taking on Corey Anderson, who is 10-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened OSP minus 165, the comeback on Anderson at plus 125. Right now, looking over Five Dimes, it is actually OSP minus 160, the comeback on Anderson plus 140. So line margins have tightened up. There's two-way action coming in this fight. A lot of people are probably wanting to stay away from this fight. It is kind of a tough one. I mean, they're both guys have a path to victory here. There's no doubt about that. OSP coming off of a pretty impressive win as a headliner in Japan recently against Okami. And of course, Anderson, he's had a bit of an up and down UFC career thus far. I mean, unfortunately for him, he's coming off of a loss to Manoa, actually, and he ended up getting knocked out early in that fight in the first round, which not a surprise with Manoa's power. We all know that that's what he does best, but that's a problem with Anderson, though. It's his chin. I mean, he was winning that fight against John Vellante, and then all of a sudden Vellante is able to catch him in that third round as well. I mean, going back to that fight. So, I mean, his chin's hung in there against other dangerous strikers. I mean, if you look at the Shogun fight or whatnot and situations like that. So, yeah, Anderson can survive, but in most cases you cannot trust that chin against a powerful striker, and OSP fits that bill. Now, again, I know OSP has more than just striking to offer. Obviously, he's finished fights on the ground. He's got some decent offensive wrestling in his own right and some submission skill, of course, and his takedown defense is okay, but he can be put on his back. That's exactly what Anderson's going to have to exploit here, as we all know. Anderson's going to have to go for those takedowns. He's going to have to put OSP on his back, and he's going to have to do it all three rounds for him to win this fight. So that's where it's a little bit challenging. OSP, typically, again, he does have pretty solid takedown defense, but he has been exploited that way as well in the past. So it's really who can implement their game plan the best. I mean, if OSP is able to keep those takedowns stuffed and is able to keep this fight upright, he finds that vulnerable chin of Anderson and he probably puts him out. If Anderson's able to get those takedowns and continue to maintain control and drop some bombs on OSP along the way, I think he probably has a hard time finishing OSP, but he grinds out a decision win. So I think that's the way this fight plays out. Either Anderson on the cards or OSP finishes him inside. Anderson's boxing offensively is not too bad, but again, he don't want to play that game because his chin just can't hold up to the firepower OSP is going to bring at him. So to me, I'm a little bit stuck on his fight because I do think OSP, I favor him and I'm going to pick him to win, but I do think, again, he's vulnerable on the ground, and if Anderson can get those takedowns, he's going to lose. OSP's going to lose. So whoever implements their game plan, as I said, is going to win this fight. I'm going to lean a little bit more OSP. I think he probably does stuff the takedowns to keep it upright, and if so, he probably wins. But it's not a real confident pick because, again, I mean, OSP is one of those guys that you think he's going to stuff those takedowns and then ends up on his back a few times throughout the fight and loses the fight. So not a confident pick, but I got to lean OSP's way.
My reasoning is going to be very similar to Nick's. Oben St. Preux has a lot of power. Corey Anderson doesn't have a lot of durability. So if St. Preux is going to win, he's going to have to hit Anderson hard. I mean, Anderson should have been able to take Jimmy Manoa down and beat him up over the course of three or five rounds. I can't remember if that was the main event or not, but he ended up standing and trading too long, and he got clipped, and then he got knocked out. Oben St. Preux even got knocked out by Manoa, but that's a different story. But, and Oben St. Preux, when he gets taken down, I mean, he gets beat. I mean, look what happened when he faced Ryan Bader. Look what happened when he faced Glover Teixeira. So that is a cause for concern. So both guys have flaws, and both guys have the ability to exploit their opponent's flaw. It's just all about who can implement their game plan, stick to it, and execute it. So, both guys have a clear path to victory. Anderson needs to take St. Preux down and wear him out. St. Preux needs to knock Anderson out. I don't think St. Preux can win a decision here unless he can just keep it standing and outpoint Anderson, but that seems unlikely because Anderson probably would be getting takedowns at some point along the way just because, OSP, well, he fends off a decent amount of takedowns. I mean, at some point, a lot of guys do get him down, that try to. I mean, the only time that a wrestler was able to get him down and then had some trouble was Patrick Cummins. He got him down and then St. Preux got back up and knocked him out. So that could be a situation here, but I think Corey Anderson is a little bit better at implementing the wrestling and keeping you down than Cummins is. So overall, this is a competitive fight with both guys having very clear and real paths to victory. And I think it's evenly matched, but I'm going to side with St. Preux. Neither guy is, to me, an elite light heavyweight, even though they're both ranked in the top 10. I think that more speaks to the shallowness of the light heavyweight division than anything. So my pick's going to be Oben St. Preux. I think he, at some point, over the course of three rounds and with every round starting standing, St. Preux lands that left hook and puts Anderson out. So my pick is going to be OSP. Now moving up to the heavyweight division, we have Walt Harris, who is 10-5, taking on Mark Godbeer, who is 12-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Harris, -315, the comeback on Godbeer, +235. Right now, looking over five times, it is Harris -400, Godbeer is +325. Won't get really too much into this fight. I mean, for those of you guys, I don't want to lead you to another podcast, but Brian and I covered this whole fight during the UFC podcast. So check out the Premium Oddscast for UFC 216, and our full breakdown for this fight will be on that one as well. But, I mean, the short of it here, I just think Harris's athleticism. I mean, you basically have a striker versus striker matchup here. I know Harris stepped up and he fought Verdum on the main card, and he suffered a loss recently as well, but he didn't take much damage, obviously. That armbar, it was pretty nasty. Verdum had a pretty nice submission there, but obviously Harris's arm didn't get hurt and he was able to come back and take this fight again, which should have happened again at UFC 216. So striker versus striker matchup. I just think Harris's athleticism will lead him to a win here. I mean, Godbeer is probably a little bit underrated and the line got inflated a little bit. It is minus 400 now from minus 315. So Godbeer does have a little bit of power in his hands and Harris has been clipped in the past. So again, another tough spot for betting at where the current price of minus 400 is. But overall, I think it's Harris's fight to win or lose. If he fights smart, shows his athleticism again, he's got the speed, he's got the power, he's got the technique to defeat Godbeer and probably inside the distance. If not, if it does hit the scorecards, somehow, some way, I think Harris still outpoints Godbeer and wins a decision there as well. So Harris's fight to win or lose, I'll leave it at that, and my pick is Harris to win.
Yeah, on the previous podcast before Harris got drawn into the main card, I picked Harris to win. I mean, Mark Godbeer, he could knock Harris out. Harris is a little bit chinny, but overall, Harris is just the better athlete compared to Godbeer. He's bigger, he's stronger, and he has more ways to win, and I think that if they're trading punch for punch, it's Harris that's probably going to land. And Harris might even be able to get takedowns if he wants to. So I think this is a good opportunity for Harris to bounce back. I mean, he had a letdown against Fabricio Verdum, but Mark Godbeer is not Fabricio Verdum. I mean, he is not even close. He is not even in the same planet as Fabricio Verdum. So if Harris can bounce back, Mark Godbeer is the guy to do it against. So my pick is going to be Walt Harris. I think he probably knocks Godbeer out along the way. Now this brings us to the main event of the preliminary card. We have a lightweight contest between James Vick, who is 11-1, and Joe Duffy, who is 16-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Duffy minus 140, the comeback on Vic, even money. Right now, looking over at Five Dimes, it's Duffy minus 200, the comeback on Vic at plus 170. Early action did come in on Duffy's way. I opened the line a little bit too low, but we did see some action come back after the line kind of escalated. It got over 200, and then it dropped back down to reality a little bit. Now it's kind of back up to 200, like I said. So early action came in Duffy's way. Then we saw some action on Vic. Now we're seeing some action back towards Duffy. This is a tough fight. I mean, I set the line close because I think both of these guys are at the point where, I mean, they can make some noise here with a solid win against a very tough opponent, either Vic or Duffy. I mean, it goes a long way here. I mean, both these guys are well-respected lightweights. They can get themselves skyrocketed up the ladder with a very solid or impressive finish, especially, and they're both capable of doing so. So getting into the stylistic matchup here, I think, again, it's going to be fireworks. It's competitive. I think both guys can make a case for winning this fight. I think the line's a little bit too high, honestly, where it's at right now, and I think it is a dog or pass situation. And that being said, I think Vic is a very complete fighter. I mean, his wrestling, I think, offensively is on point. He probably doesn't go to it enough. I mean, I think he could probably be a little bit more dominant in that area, but he is pretty tall. I mean, there's no question about that. But his takedown defense overall, I think, is pretty solid as well. So he's got some wrestling that, again, can be improved a little bit, and he needs to keep on working on it. But that Lloyd Irving grappling, man, it's something that's impressive to watch him work his jiu-jitsu game. There's no doubt about that. But even on the feet, Vic has some length. He's got some power. He's got some skill. I mean, he's got a good knee attack. He's got a good clinch game. I mean, he's starting to become a very smart fighter, and he knows – you know, what the game kind of brings and what his opponent brings usually. He's well prepared. So got to respect Vic. And that's why I think he might be a live dog here, actually, especially at plus 170. It all depends on his chin, though. That's where it's at with Vic. I think the problem and the confidence level decreases for me with his chin. He's got that tall man's defense where at times, I mean, he lets too many strikes hit that chin. He gets rocked. He doesn't look good. I mean, at times you think, oh, man, he's going to lose this fight. He's about to be out. But he's tough enough that in most cases he survives that attack and ends up winning the fight. But he has been knocked out. That loss to Darius not too long ago was evident of that. But since that time, he put together some impressive back-to-back wins. I think he's probably tightened up his defense enough that if he's smart about this fight, I mean, he'll be game. And he probably holds up against a very, very game Duffy here. Duffy, on the other hand, he's looked great as well. I think he's finally coming into his own. He had a tough loss not too long ago against Poirier, but that was a very competitive fight. And Poirier, as we all know, is a well-respected lightweight. So Duffy, the only man – I mean, well, I shouldn't say the only man, but one of the only people that are currently on the UFC roster, not named Nate Diaz at least, to defeat Conor McGregor. So he's got that kind of hype, you know, coming into the UFC. And of course he's been performing well. So it's not just hype. I mean, the guy is a skilled fighter. He's a very complete fighter in his own right as well. He's got some decent wrestling. He's got some decent, grappling ability, underrated grappling, especially offensively. And his boxing's on point. I mean, he does have some nice hands and he has power to go along with it. So I think that's where he's going to have the advantage over Vic. I think his boxing's going to come into play. He probably is. Ends up being successful, landing on Vic, and he might possibly put that, chin to work and, probably knock Vic out if he ends up landing on him. So Duffy has that kind of knockout power and that ability to, chin check Vic and probably put him out if he's able to keep the fight upright, which I think he probably will be. But I mean, if Vic gets around his neck, Vic gets his back or anything like that, I think Duffy can be in serious trouble because that is his flaw. His kryptonite, in my opinion, is still the ground game where his sub defense is a concern, but his sub offense at times is not. So offensively, he's okay. He's got a well put together jujitsu game, but defensively, if you get his back, he could be in some serious trouble. And, or if you get his neck, I think Vic has those sneaky chokes, great guillotine chokes, great anaconda type of chokes. I mean, Vic can definitely, get around Duffy's neck and possibly end it that way as well. So both guys have path to victories here. Both guys are a little bit flawed and both guys have fireworks when it comes to offense at times as well. So it should be a great fight. So the pick is going to be Duffy because I think he probably has a better chance of keeping the fight upright and doing more damage on the feet and possibly knocking Vic out than Vic does getting him to the ground or getting his back or getting his neck. So not ultra confident. And again, especially with all the betting action kind of leaning Duffy's way, I think everybody might get burned here. So it is a dog or pass situation, especially if the odds are plus 170, as I mentioned, but the pure pick has to be Duffy's way.
This is a tricky fight because James Vic always seems to fight up or fight to his expectations where he takes on some decent fighters and he pulls off victories. I mean, he took on, you know, Jake Matthews was a top prospect and Vic was able to choke him out quickly. Abel Trujillo, pretty good fighter, very dangerous, and Vic has a tendency to get blasted on the feet and Vic submits him. So I think James Vic is definitely a very dangerous matchup here for Joe Duffy. But that being said, he clearly has flaws which Duffy can exploit. Duffy has a very good boxing background. He even went into professional boxing for a while when he took a break from MMA after he beat Conor. And Duffy, if this fight stays standing, even though Vic has a slight reach advantage, it's not a major one. You would think he would have a major one because Vic has a very long reach for the lightweight division, but he's only got 3 inches on Duffy, who has a pretty good reach himself in the lightweight division. So, and Vic definitely does not know how to use that distance very well. I mean, he needs to warm up in fights often. He can get hurt badly early. And that's what's happened in his one loss to Beneil Dariush. Basically, the one time he faced a legitimate top 15 fighter, Vic got blown out. Now, I'm not saying Joe Duffy's a top 15 fighter, but I think he's close. He's kind of on the fringe. I mean, he had a competitive fight against Dustin Poirier, who is clearly a top 15 fighter. So, if Duffy can get that his game to that next level, then he'll be in a good position. And I think James Vic is a very beatable opponent for him. Duffy should have a massive technical striking advantage in this fight. He has a significant defensive advantage on the feet. And I just don't think that James Vic has an easy ability to get this fight to the floor. He only has 25% takedown accuracy. He's not much of a wrestler. Yeah, Duffy got taken down by Poirier, but I think Poirier has underrated takedown ability. And Duffy has, for the most part, defended takedowns a lot better against everyone else. And that clearly was a focus, I think, with him after the Poirier loss. So Joe Duffy is in a position where I think he can look really good in this fight. It's just all about whether or not he can implement what Firas Sahabi's teaching him over at TriStar. And Duffy just needs to utilize that striking advantage and keep this fight standing because I think his chin should hold up. Vic's won't. And Duffy should land some really clean shots in this fight. And I would not be shocked one bit if he doesn't just win, but if he knocks James Vic out. So my pick is going to be Joe Duffy. Now moving on to the pay-per-view main card, we have a middleweight contest between Johnny Hendricks, who is 18-7, and Paulo Costa, who is 10-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I've been Borrachina Costa at minus 185, the comeback on Hendricks at plus 155. So Borrachina, again, coming in as a favorite over a proven former UFC champion in Johnny Hendricks. Even though it's at middleweight, I think that's probably going to be a head scratcher for most people to understand here, because obviously Johnny Hendricks is by far the more popular fighter. But looking over at fivedimes.eu currently, it is Borrachina minus 255. The comeback on Hendricks is at plus 215. So minus 185 was not enough. It got bet up even more so. A lot of people were basically thinking, look, Borrachina is a beast. There's no doubt about that. He's got knockout power. I mean, he's ran through, I mean, 9 of his 10 wins have been by knockout, and he's a strong middleweight. Hendricks, to me, is an undersized middleweight. I know that, you know, the weight cut was difficult for him at 170 pounds. But that being said, I mean, he's small at 185 pounds. He's facing a guy now in Borrachina that's 26 years old, that's going to be 8 years younger than him. He's going to have that youth advantage on his side, obviously. And he's got size over Hendricks, and he's got that knockout ability too. And Hendricks' chin is not getting any better. We've seen that before as well. Hendricks is really going to have to wrestle his butt off here to win this fight. I mean, he's going to have to get those takedowns every round and maintain control, do some damage on the ground as well. And he's going to have to probably do it for 3 rounds straight to win this fight. Now, again, he does have that experience over Borrachina against high level competition. So you really can't count Hendricks out. I think people are kind of underestimating him a little bit here at minus 255 where the line is now. But that being said, do I have confidence in picking Hendricks here? Probably not. I think the guy honestly made some mistakes late in his career with, I mean, he moved camps. He switched up a lot of things, and including weight classes here. And I think it was kind of a bad move for him. So I don't think it's going to end well for Hendricks. As far as his UFC career goes, I think he's going to probably suffer another loss and probably by knockout here against Borrachina. But again, would I bet minus 255? No, because Borrachina has been taken down in the past, and Hendricks is a great wrestler. Even if it's at, again, if he's undersized at 185 pounds, he still has that technique and that wrestling ability that he could possibly give Borrachina fits if he gets the fight to the ground. So that's the wild card in his pocket. And I mean, you can never count out a tremendous all-American wrestler like Johnny Hendricks, especially a former UFC champion like that. So maybe we're all underestimating what he has left and his size and all that mess. But to be truthful, I don't have confidence to pick him. So I'm going to go Borrachina's way. I think he probably does knock out Hendricks.
Yeah, it's crazy to think that GSP is making his comeback after 4 years, and Johnny Hendricks is basically on his way out at this point. When Hendricks fought GSP 4 years ago, which was GSP's last fight, I mean, that was kind of like a changing of the guard almost, even though the judges sided with GSP in a very close fight. I mean, Johnny Hendricks' career has just been completely down the dumpster in recent years. He's had major issues with his weight. He's been undisciplined in his preparation. He gains way too much in between fights. And then blaming his coaches, he switched up camps. And now I guess he's went over to Greg Jackson's. And to me, that's just too little too late. I mean, he's put his body through too much. He's taken too much damage. He had some wars against Robbie Lawler. And then he got knocked out by Stephen Thompson. And then most recently by Tim Boach. And he didn't just get knocked out by Tim Boach. He got smoked by Tim Boach. That wasn't even competitive. So, you know, what happened to Johnny Hendricks? He's not really utilizing his wrestling that much anymore. He's just is not a fun fighter to watch. And yeah, there's probably that ability still there. And if he's going to win, it has to be with his wrestling here. I think, yeah, he had some heavy hands back in the day, but he hasn't shown anything with his hands in years. And Paulo Costa, this guy is just scary on the feet. I mean, he just swarms people and takes them out. If Johnny Hendricks stays on the feet too long with this guy, he is going to get clipped, and he is going to get swarmed, and he is going to get finished. I'm almost certain of it. But if Hendricks can use his wrestling, he can take that away from him, and he could win. So I'm not saying that Hendricks can't win. I think the line's a little out of whack, because maybe Greg Jackson can just get into Hendrix's brain a little bit and, you know, find something that can get him to go back to the old Johnny Hendrix. But the fact that this fight's at middleweight, I mean, Hendrix didn't even make weight at middleweight his last fight. That's how bad he was. So I'm concerned, but I think the move to Greg Jackson might help, but who knows? I mean, fighters at the end of their career, they try some crazy things. Frank Mir moved out to Greg Jackson near the end of his career. That didn't help him at all. So that could be what's happening here. But I'm going to side with Paulo Costa. I think that Hendrix is going to have a little bit of trouble with Costa being a little bit taller, a little bit longer, a little bit stronger than him, and Costa probably finishes him on the feet. But if Hendrix can use his wrestling, the path to victory is there, but I'm siding with Costa, the younger, more promising prospect. Now dropping down to the welterweight division, we have Stephen Thompson, who is 13-2-1, taking on Jorge Masvidal, who is 32-12. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Thompson -160, the comeback on Masvidal +120. Right now, looking over five dimes, it is Thompson -185, the comeback on Masvidal +160. So a little bit more action coming in Thompson's way. There was two-way action coming into this fight for a while. It was kind of bouncing back and forth a little bit. But now as we're getting closer to fight time, everybody going for the striker versus striker matchup and what should be the better striker in Thompson here against a very game Masvidal. So this is an interesting matchup. I think the way the line is kind of going here, I'm starting to like Masvidal more and more as we speak. I mean, this is – again, I have nothing but respect for Stephen Thompson. I mean, his striking ability I think is – probably the best overall in the UFC as far as what he's accomplished, even outside of the UFC with his striking career. I mean, the kickboxing, the level of striking that he has. I mean, he's shown it time and time again in the UFC. So the guy's a special striker. He's a special talent. But the problem with Thompson for me is he is a little bit chinny. I mean, he's been clipped a little bit. He hasn't been knocked out officially, but he's been dropped in fights. And against Masvidal, I mean, Masvidal has that killer instinct. If he drops you and he does have enough power to do so, I mean, he's going to go in there and wrap your neck up and choke you out, or he's going to probably just pound you out as well. So Masvidal has that killer instinct. Now, again, if this stays upright, it should be back and forth. Thompson is, I think, the more diverse fighter as far as what he can throw at you. Masvidal, I think, has the better hands here. He's a better boxer, pure boxer here. I think he's got the kind of nasty attitude that will push forward a little bit and try to talk smack as Thompson's kind of doing what he does and using his footwork and moving around and using his angles in the cage. But also, I think Masvidal in his back pocket has a little bit of wrestling that people are probably underestimating here as well. Thompson has great takedown defense, but if you're setting up your hands well, like Masvidal could do, and then stealing a quick takedown along the way in a very competitive round, which I think it will be competitive, then Masvidal could go into this fight possibly and steal a round or two utilizing an underrated wrestling game. Now, also, again, I mentioned chokes. I think Masvidal, he's an opportunistic type of submission fighter. He doesn't really go for him. I mean, he's just a nasty striker. He's the type of guy that rather knock you out than choke you out. But make no mistake, if he gets to that point where he gets close to your neck, he does have the submission ability to finish a fight that way. So I think the more complete fighter overall is Masvidal. I mean, again, Thompson has made some great strides. I mean, for crying out loud, he could be the welterweight champion right now. His fights with Woodley were extremely close. You know, so that's how top of the food chain he is right now, top level. I mean, he's going to have some size over Masvidal as well. Masvidal, let's not forget, he was fighting at lightweight for a while, bouncing back and forth between lightweight and obviously welterweight. Now he's kind of settled into welterweight. He's done a fantastic job. So I think it is a good weight class for him. He's not going to be, I mean, ridiculously undersized. In fact, the reach is only going to be about an inch or so, but Thompson will be the bigger fighter here. So a lot comes to play here. I don't know. For me, I'm leaning a little bit more towards Masvidal. I think he's got the right attitude. He's got that nasty streak going in him. I think Thompson has that nice guy attitude, which doesn't matter when he fights. He's going to bring it anyway. But I just think that chin is what worries me a little bit more so than anything else here. Now, Masvidal has been knocked out before, and he's kind of a bit chinny at times as well. I mean, he's been clipped. He's been rocked. He does recover fairly quickly as well. So, but I do think out of the two, if I had to trust somebody's chin, I think it's actually Masvidal in this matchup. So it's a striker versus striker contest. I think Masvidal can actually mix in a little bit of wrestling along the way as well. So for me, it is a dog or pass situation right now. I mean, Masvidal +160 definitely has some value in my eyes, especially how it should be a competitive fight. So as far as the pick goes, I'm actually going to lean that way as well. I'm going to pick him straight out. I'm going to go against the grain. I'm going to go against what everybody thinks should be Thompson's fight to win or lose. And on paper, it kind of should be, but I think it won't play out that way. I think Masvidal, even if he's losing his fight early on, I think he brings it and he puts his foot on the gas at a certain point and possibly takes the fight over or even maybe finishes Thompson. So my pick is going to be Masvidal to pull off the upset win over Thompson.
Stephen Thompson is one of the better strikers in the UFC. I mean, the guy can utilize distance extremely well. He has an unorthodox style. His kicking game is incredibly unique. But that being said, there are some flaws in his game. He has become a little bit tentative because he has been hit hard in some recent fights and hurt. And you saw that in the Woodley fight. I mean, that everyone thought the rematch with Woodley was going to be pretty good fight, at least because the first one was so entertaining and had so many great moments, but it was just a complete snooze fest and neither guy really pulled the trigger until the fifth round. So this time around, I would hope that Thompson can just pull the trigger a little bit more, but there's no guarantee. I mean, Jorge Masvidal is a dangerous fighter. He's not quite the athlete that Tyron Woodley is. He doesn't have the wrestling credentials that Woodley has or maybe the pure punching power that Woodley has, but his technique is excellent. I mean, this guy, Masvidal, has some of the best boxing in the welterweight division. I think his wrestling game is extremely underrated. His defensive wrestling is very good, and his striking defense is pretty good. He's overall a very dangerous fighter. Basically, what Thompson has that could exploit Masvidal is the kicking game. If he can really get those kicks going, some leg kicks, maybe get Masvidal thinking low or to the body, and then get him in the head, that's where you're going to find your success. If Masvidal can get inside against Thompson, there's a good chance he could hurt him and drop him. If Thompson can land a head kick against Masvidal, there's a good chance he can hurt him and drop him. But where Masvidal might have another advantage is the takedowns. Masvidal's takedowns are very good. I mean, he has 61% accuracy overall in his MMA career. When the stand-up isn't going well, and typically it is, but when it isn't, he gets takedowns, and then that helps him win. So I think Masvidal is the more well-rounded of the two, but Thompson is the more dynamic overall striker of the two. So basically, if Thompson can keep his distance and land the kicks, I think he's going to be in a good position to win this fight. But if Masvidal can get inside on the feet and then get inside and work for takedowns, then Masvidal's going to have a good chance to win this fight. And honestly, I'm with Nick here. I think Masvidal does have a good chance to win this fight because he could win it standing and he could win it on the ground. And Stephen Thompson can only win this standing. So I actually like Jorge Masvidal. It's not a guarantee by any stretch, but I think that there's a decent chance that he could pull this one out. So my pick is going to be Gamebred. Now this brings us to the first of three title fights on the card. This is the Women's Strawweight Championship, and we have champion Joanna Jędrzejczyk, who is 14-0, taking on Rose Namajunas, who is 7-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds maker's perspective on this one?
I opened Jędrzejczyk -385, the comeback on Namajunas +295. So just under 4-1, around 4-1 for Jędrzejczyk, the champion, and Namajunas about +300 dog. Now that did not last. I mean, everybody coming in on Jędrzejczyk, she's now -700. The comeback on Namajunas is at +500. So people throwing her in parlays, people think that Jędrzejczyk's invincible. I mean, man, I'll tell you what, the performance she had last time against Andrade, it's hard to argue that. I mean, and to my opinion, I thought Andrade was going to give her everything she can handle, but Jędrzejczyk, just her professionalism, her ability in the cage. I mean, her striking ability, her takedown defense. She is, I mean, the champion for a reason, an undefeated champion for a reason. I mean, she's able to face adversity in fights. I mean, look, Gadella, in my opinion, was a terrible stylistic matchup for her. She's been able to beat her as well. So, I mean, she's faced the best there is to face in the weight class, and she's ran through all of them. I mean, whether it's, you know, outlasting Gadella and having the better cardio to win that matchup, or again, what she did, she put on a clinic against Andrade. I mean, it was very, very impressive. Again, I was shocked to see that. So I understand. I mean, she's Joanna champion for a reason. I mean, she's, like I said, she's legit. There's no doubt about that. She's a special fighter, one of the best all-time fighters in the UFC already. So, I mean, sky's the limit for her. But that being said, I think Domingunis is a little bit dangerous here. I mean, I think I opened it a little bit lower than most people probably thought it would be, because I do think I understand Domingunis in this matchup. She doesn't have the greatest wrestling. She shouldn't be able to kind of get the takedowns against Jacek, but I'll tell you what, Domingunis is an opportunistic type of grappler as well. And if she's able to get a hold or hop on Jacek's back, I mean, it's a wrap. I think she can exploit something that I think might be vulnerable in Jacek's game. That's her ground game. I mean, now again, Gadella wasn't able to really exploit it too much because she's, Jacek managed to get herself back up to the feet. And in most cases, so she, you know, she, even though she got taken out, she was able to scramble up pretty quickly, and Gadella wasn't able to work her ground game. But Namajunas is a different type of grappler. She's the type of grappler that will hop on your back or, you know, try to finish fights any way she can, whether it's an anaconda choke, into transition, all sorts of crazy stuff that she has in her game. And also, we can't count her out in defeat. She does have a little bit of knockout power. I mean, she hasn't knocked anybody out in her career. But that being said, she has a little bit of power for 115 pounds, and she's got that killer instinct as well. So I don't think she wins a striking matchup here. Obviously, that's not what I'm saying. My pick is going to be on Jacek to win. But part of me thinks that if Namajunas is smart, and if she can hang in there and make this a five-round kind of competitive, somewhat competitive fight, and she is able to find a spot in this fight where she could take a back or grab a neck or grab a choke like that, I think we could see possibly an upset win, a big upset. So again, I don't think it happens, but she does have a path to victory, and I think that's it, in my opinion, at least. So line is a little bit much now at minus 700. I think it should be a lot lower in this. It probably is a dog or pet situation now, but I wouldn't recommend obviously going in on the dog here. I think until we do see Jacek being a little bit more vulnerable or getting caught in something like that and finally seeing a chink in her armor, I don't think you can kind of bet against the lady right now. So she's at the top of her game for a reason, and she probably successfully defends here as well. So the pick is Jacek to retain her title.
Rose Namajunas is a very talented fighter, and I've underestimated her in the past, but she does have issues when she steps up to the elite of the elite in the division. I mean, you look – and her losses, Tisha Torres early in her career, I thought, honestly, you could have given the rematch against Tisha Torres to Torres. Rose lost pretty convincingly to Carolina Kovalkiewicz. And then in her first title fight, which was the finals of her season of The Ultimate Fighter that introduced the women's strawweight division, she started okay against Carla Esparza, and then she got dominated on the ground and eventually finished. So I just don't see this going that well for Rose. Rose is improving. Her stand-up is getting better. She's adding some pop. Before, she was flashy on the feet, but she wasn't really able to sit down on her strikes and do damage. Now she's able to do a little bit of damage. I mean, that head kick against the Karate Hottie was impressive, and that set up a finish. If Rose has any chance whatsoever to win this fight, it's going to be her hurting Joanna on the feet and then jumping on a submission quickly. If that doesn't happen, I don't see how she wins, because I don't see Rose getting takedowns against young Jacek, and overall I don't see Rose winning an extended striking battle with Joanna. I mean, Joanna just won a 5-round just pure domination in her last fight. I mean, it literally was not even close. And that was against a very, very talented opponent in Jessica Andrade, who, in my opinion right now, is the clear-cut number two fighter in the division. And it wasn't even close. It was 5-round stomping. I mean, Andrade barely landed a punch. That's what it felt like over the course of 5 rounds. So Rose has her work cut out for her. Now, granted, Rose does have the same reach as Joanna. She's actually got a little bit longer legs as well, so that could play into this. I mean, Joanna doesn't have the huge reach advantage like she did against Andrade, but I still think just with the technique that she has, with her history of striking, the impressive displays she's put on so far in her title defenses, people aren't just talking about her as a great champion and fighter. I mean, they're talking about she might be potentially the best women's fighter in UFC history. I mean, she's about to either tie or break Ronda's run of title defenses. And it looks like there's no stopping her for a while at this point. So I have to side with Ioana. Rose is talented. I think she does have the better ground game, but I just don't see how she gets there unless she lands something crazy against Ioana and sets that up that way. But other than a flash knockdown or something, I think Ioana Jędrzejczyk rolls in this fight. So my pick has got to be Ioana. Now, this brings us to the co-main event of the evening. We have a bantamweight title fight on the line between a champion and the former champion. Cody Garbrandt, who is 11-0, takes on TJ Dillashaw, who is 15-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Garbrandt -135, the comeback on Dillashaw at +105. Interesting little side note here. Originally, I opened this with ESPN, and Dillashaw was -130, and Garbrandt was even money. And that was way back when the fight was supposed to originally take place. So it's been a while, and when we reopened the line, obviously from the action coming in Garbrandt's way, it was a big indicator for us to go Garbrandt's way as well. So it did open up -135 officially for UFC 217 and the comeback on Dillashaw at +105, like I said. Right now, looking over at Five Dimes, it is Garbrandt -185. The comeback on Dillashaw is at +160, and the line recently got bet up a little bit and to somewhat of a wacky faction, in my opinion, because I think that this is, I mean, kind of ridiculous in a way, because both these guys are tremendous fighters. I mean, you have two of the best bantamweights in the world, no doubt about that. But Dillashaw, I think people are underestimating him severely in this spot here. I mean, the guy's been a warrior since, you know, he made his original UFC debut from the Ultimate Fighter show. I know he lost that, you know, the finale to Dotson by knockout, but outside of that, I mean, Dillashaw has been impressive, man. He's got that wrestling background we all know about. And then working with, Bang Ludwig, I mean, we've seen what his striking, has become, and he's an elite level fighter. I mean, just look at his win over Lineker. I mean, who have you seen really destroy a guy like John Lineker as much as Dillashaw? I mean, nobody's made Lineker, I guess, look that bad. I mean, I know Lineker suffered losses before, but I mean, that was just remarkable for me. I wasn't expecting it to be that kind of an ass whooping, honestly, but Dillashaw did put it on him, and he just showed he's the more complete MMA fighter. And that's what my concern is here against Garbrandt. Garbrandt is a tremendous talent. I mean, the guy has a wrestling background in his own right. His stand-up ability, I mean, what his performance against Dominic Cruz was outstanding. I mean, a lot of us had question marks about Garbrandt before that fight, thinking, is he ready for that? I mean, we all saw the potential. We all saw the talent that Garbrandt had, but was he ready for that level? Well, he proved us all wrong if we doubted him at all. I mean, he showed us that he is ready for that, and he deserves to wear that strap around his waist right now. Garbrandt is a special fighter. He is a tremendous athlete. He's a tremendous striker. Obviously, as we know, he's got the speed. He's got the power. He's got the diversity as well. So Garbrandt deserve to be where he's at right now. There's no question about it. The guy's worked hard throughout his whole life. I mean, he has had nothing handed to him. I mean, he's earned everything he's gotten. So I'm glad to see him at this point. So this is an awesome fight. I mean, this is definitely another fight that I'm expecting fireworks. But again, where the current line is here, that's where I have an issue. I think Garbrandt might have a small advantage in this fight, but it should be a closer to, honestly, where the opening line was, about picking with a slight lean towards Garbrandt, because there is some question marks still we have to get addressed here with Garbrandt. And that one big question mark in my mind is his ground game. What if somebody can take Garbrandt down? We haven't been able to see that because his takedown defense is tremendous. But what if somebody can get Garbrandt down? If anybody could do it, it's a guy like Dillashaw. What if somebody does take Garbrandt's back? I mean, that's a question mark I have as well. Is he going to be able to sustain against a guy like Dillashaw that's going after the choke? I mean, there's just too many question marks, in my opinion, still surrounding Garbrandt, even though he's wearing that strap on the ground. And again, even though he is a special athlete, a special talent, I mean, you know, it doesn't mean that he's not susceptible to getting tapped out by a guy like Dillashaw. And Dillashaw obviously knows Garbrandt well. You can say the same thing about Garbrandt. They used to train together. We all know the rivalry with Alpha Male and Dwayne Ludwig and crew and all the split and all the Ultimate Fighter show. We've all seen all the storyline here. And there's a lot of truth to it. I mean, both these guys are familiar with each other. Both these guys know each other's weaknesses as well. So can Garbrandt exploit Dillashaw's weakness? Can Dillashaw exploit Garbrandt's weakness? I mean, it's going to come down to that. So I'm expecting a great fight. Again, I'm not as confident to lay almost 2-1 against Dillashaw. That's crazy to me. So for me, I'm actually going to pick Dillashaw to pull off the upset. I'm going to go against the grain here. I think that, again, I love Garbrandt. I think he's a tremendous fighter, and part of me hopes I'm wrong here, but I can't really count out Dillashaw. I think he's just a little bit ahead of Garbrandt at this point of his career in the UFC. I think he's just the more complete fighter. If this fight stays upright on the feet, I do give Garbrandt a slight edge, but Dillashaw can hang with him on the feet. Dillashaw has knockout power. We all have seen, again, his improvement on the feet as well. So wherever this fight takes place, it's not going to be like Dillashaw's out of his realm at all. I think, in fact, he's going to have, again, a huge advantage if it does hit the ground and he's able to keep it there, or hop on Garbrandt's back. So with all that being said, this is going to be a heck of a fight. I know it. I think either guy can end each other's night early here. They got that kind of special finishing ability, and it's not a confident pick, because how could you ever be confident picking against a guy like Garbrandt, because he's that special with talent. But honestly, got to go with my gut in my head, and it says Dillashaw might pull this out. So that's who I'm going to pick it. I'm going to pick Dillashaw to pull off the upset over Garbrandt and become the bantamweight champion once again.
TJ Dillashaw is still a very talented striker. I mean, yeah, Cody Garbrandt in their common opponent, Dominic Cruz, clearly did better against Cruz than Dillashaw did. But granted, I thought Dillashaw won the Cruz fight when he fought him. So Dillashaw since then has been tremendous. I mean, he went in there and he took on one of the best fighters in the world that wasn't the champ, in Rafael Assuncao, and won a clear-cut decision. Then he took on John Lineker, one of the scariest fighters in the bantamweight division that nobody wanted to fight, and he absolutely dominated him. Just pure destruction over the course of three rounds with 5 takedowns, 8 guard passes, and outstruck him 2-1. I mean, that was one of the better performances of his career. And the fact that he was so willing to go to the ground and fight smart might set up his path to victory here. I mean, TJ Dillashaw does have a very good amateur wrestling background. Now, Cody Garbrandt has a decent wrestling background as well, but it's not even close to the level of what TJ went through in college. So I think Cody Garbrandt is a very talented fighter, but I think it's more that he's on TJ's level on the feet. This fight's going to be competitive if it only is standing. But if TJ Dillashaw can drag it to the floor, then there's a good chance he might be able to win this fight. Now, granted, Cody Garbrandt has 100% takedown defense, and he did a really good job of making Dominic Cruz look really bad in his last fight. Cruz was diving in for takedowns, and Garbrandt just olayed him. So that's something that Dillashaw is going to have to find a way to get him down. And it won't be easy, but I think if anybody can get him down, it might be Dillashaw. One other thing you have to consider is they were supposed to fight a while back, and Garbrandt had to back out because of a back injury. That's not just a thing that just magically heals. I mean, people, when they hurt their back, that's going to bother them for the rest of their careers. I mean, look at Derek Lewis. He's had a bad back for years, and it's affected him in fights, and he just recently had to pull out of a fight like the day of the fight because of that. So I think that could be something that might even be affecting Garbrandt heading into this fight. And as talented as Cody Garbrandt is, and as much as I've kind of rooted for him, I mean, I got to watch one of his amateur fights back in Ohio before he even turned pro. So I mean, I've been on Team Garbrandt all the way, but I think TJ Dillashaw is the more well-rounded of the two. And with his training environment and everything, I think that he's in a good position to not just win, but maybe even stop Cody Garbrandt along the way. I think both guys, if they can connect with something heavy, they could knock either one out. They've both been hurt before on the feet. So, you know, I think this is going to be a wild, crazy fight, but I just see TJ Dillashaw having a few more tools in his tool belt. So I have TJ Dillashaw pulling off the upset as well. Now, this brings us to the main event of the evening for the UFC middleweight title. We have the champion, Michael Bisping, who is 31-7, taking on George Rush St. Pierre, who returns from a 4-year hiatus, and he has a 25-2 record. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
This line's been up for quite a while. In fact, I opened this with ESPN as well, so check out Brett Okamoto's article here, and it's way back when. I mean, it's been up for months and months, so when this fight was rumored and officially got announced. So it's GSP was the opener, minus 170, opening the favorite, and the comeback on Bisping at plus 140. And right now, looking over at 5dimes.eu, GSP's all the way down to minus 115, the comeback on Bisping at minus 105. So from plus 140 to minus 105 for Bisping. And you know what? I really can't argue it. I mean, the tough part about setting a line on GSP, especially since he's been out for that long, I mean, about 4 years or so. I mean, let's not forget, the guy was known as one of the all-time greats in the UFC, the hype around him. The people just want to bet GSP for his name. There's a lot that goes into the equation here. The wrestling ability of GSP. I mean, when he wants to get the fight to the ground, he gets the fight to the ground in most cases as well. So there's a lot to like about GSP. And stylistically here against Bisping, he should be the slight favorite. But that being said, I mean, this is at 185 pounds. GSP has had that time off. Bisping is fighting the best he's ever fought, even though he's 38 years old right now. Bisping, I mean, he's really, I don't want to say he's in his prime, because obviously his body and age and all that is catching up to him little by little, but he's fighting smarter than he ever fought before. He's got the confidence. He's got the way to train. I mean, he's got the game down pat right now. I mean, from talking smack to actually going out there and performing well, Bisping has never been better. So I know he's getting older, but I mean, he is in a good spot in his career right now, and he's confident that he can get a W over a guy like GSP. And how he's going to get that W is actually stuffing those takedowns from GSP. GSP says he's a changed fighter. He's been training off and on with a lot of different karate fighters, a lot of different styles that he's been bringing in to TriStar to help him train. I get it. I think his striking is going to probably be a little bit improved. But to me, what bothers me about this fight and this matchup is GSP was a shell of himself when he fought Hendricks, in my opinion. I mean, he was a declined fighter. He says it was more mental than anything else, more mental than physical. But that being said, you've seen the decline kind of coming even before the Hendricks fight with GSP. He just wasn't performing as he normally did. So what's he going to be like, even if he's been putting into work and he's got his mental issues kind of straightened out? What's he going to be like 4 years removed from the cage? I mean, when the spotlight's actually on you again and all that stuff, you know, all the stuff that he's had kind of going on in his personal life, everything kind of comes into play here. I don't know. I just don't trust it. So for me, I like where Bisping is. I know he's, again, he's had his issues with injuries. He's getting older, like I said, but he really wants this fight and he really wants this win bad. And I think stylistically, he could probably get it if he does stay off his back. And we'd all know that Bisping has shown decent takedown defense at times. He's been in there with some great wrestlers. People have had some success against Bisping getting him down, but I mean, honestly, more times than not, he's able to tough takedowns. He's able to keep the fight upright, or he's able to get back to his feet. And on the feet, he does have a striking edge over a guy like GSP. Bisping's not really known in the UFC for knockout power, but I mean, again, accumulation of strikes. If you're landing more and you're the better striker along the way in a 5-round fight, title fight, it can happen with Bisping possibly beating and knocking out a guy like GSP as well. So I'm kind of leaning a little bit more towards Bisping. It's kind of what have you done for me lately as far as this matchup goes for me. And I think stylistically, it's a type of matchup that he could probably sprawl, brawl, and beat up GSP on the feet. So we'll see how GSP looks at 185 pounds. I think he is very professional. He's gone in interviews and saying, look, he's prepared. He's put on muscle. He's done everything the right way to kind of fill out at 185 pounds. I hope he's right for his sake and for the fans' sake out there, because we want to see a good fight. We don't want to see a blowout either way. We don't want to see a GSP coming back from a four-year laid off, a guy that was once known as one of the best all-time UFC fighters in the history of the sport. I mean, coming back and looking like a shell of himself. So for his sake, for his legacy's sake, I hope he does look good and performs well. But for me, again, I trust Bisping a little bit more in this spot, so I'm going to have to go with Bisping, the slight underdog here, to pull off the win. So my pick is Michael Bisping to retain his middleweight title.
You know, when Hall of Famers and legends try to make a big comeback, it usually does not go well. I mean, look at BJ Penn. I mean, granted, he was on the decline before. Then he retired, came back, looked like garbage, retired, came back, and looked even worse. But, I mean, that's just not typically how things work in MMA. It doesn't usually work in any sport, retiring and being out for a long time and then making a big comeback. Like, it's just not how things, I mean, people don't even remember or care about when Muhammad Ali came back at the end of his career. It didn't end well. This is a fight that I'm a little concerned about. I mean, yeah, Michael Bisping is not the best middleweight in the world, in my opinion. I think, honestly, there are probably three or four middleweights that could beat him right now. but I don't think one of them is George St. Pierre. George St. Pierre at his peak could have potentially beaten Michael Bisping, but his peak was not even 4 years ago. He was at his peak probably in the middle of his run in the welterweight division when he was just cleaning house against top contender after top contender after top contender. George St. Pierre is a dynamic striker. He has pretty good kicks. He has a good jab. He has excellent takedowns. But guess what? Michael Bisping has great takedown defense. Michael Bisping is bigger, stronger. He basically has the same reach, but I think with his height advantage, with his size advantage, he should be able to overcome any of that. And yeah, Bisping isn't the most powerful guy and he doesn't have the greatest chin, but George St. Pierre was getting hurt in fights. Yeah, obviously Matt Serra knocked him out way back in the day, but he got rocked by Johnny Hendricks in his last fight. So there's a very real possibility that if Bisping connects with something solid, that he could hurt St. Pierre and knock him out. Like, GSP is a legend. He will always be a legend to me, but I just don't know what I can trust right now. I mean, you can only say so much when you've been out of the sport for 4 years. So, I mean, there's just no way that I could possibly believe that he's going to be better than, and then this is probably going to be the worst George St. Pierre you've seen. So just temper your expectations. I mean, it's great to have him back. It really is. I missed him. But the sport has changed a ton in 4 years. And St. Pierre has been busy, you know, making movies, you know, doing his own thing. Yeah, he's been doing some training, but your chin doesn't get magically better over time. And once it's down, it's usually gone. So, and I'm not saying St. Pierre had a garbage chin or anything, but I mean, you get 4 years older, usually your chin gets worse. So Michael Bisping is fighting at an elite level right now. And I think this is a great opportunity for him to retain his title. He's been fighting the right opponents ever since he won the title to help him keep his title. And I think that George St. Pierre is the right opponent for him to keep the title. I mean, it'd be crazy if St. Pierre won, if he was able to get takedowns and beat up Bisping. I mean, the place, New York would be deafening. But I'm just not feeling it. It's just too much, and I just don't trust it. And it's some things are just too good to be true. You just got to trust your gut here. And George St. Pierre, coming off of a 4-year layoff at 36 years old, I just don't see him beating Michael Bisping on Saturday night. So my pick is going to be Michael Bisping. I can't guarantee it'll be a finish, but I think Bisping should be able to just outwork him over the course of 5 rounds at least. So that'll do it for a full event breakdown for UFC 217. Now, our premium bets for the event will be released this Friday following the weigh-ins, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend. going to be a lot stronger. Okami has good wrestling, but is he really going to be able to take down OSP? I doubt it. Plus, St. Preux has some pretty sneaky ground ability. I mean, the best light heavyweights wrestlers have been able to kind of take advantage of that. But, OSP, I mean, this guy used to be throwing out calf slicers and stuff back in his Strikeforce days. I mean, this guy knows what he's doing on the ground. So I don't think Okami is going to be able to utilize his wrestling here. And then on the feet, Okami has serviceable boxing, but OSP has heavy hands, a good strong left hand, and Okami has been knocked out repeatedly. His chin is clearly a question mark. He got finished several times in the UFC at middleweight. He got finished by Dave Branch in World Series of Fighting. So I think OSP at some point connects with one of his heavy left hands and probably puts Okami out. I mean, it's great to have Okami back, but I'm not going to be shocked one bit if he drops not just one, but two weight classes down to welterweight for his next UFC bout. So my pick is going to be St. Preux, and I think he wins relatively easily. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 1. Premium bets will be released this Thursday, so later today, following the weigh-ins, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker Premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of all free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.